today on The Dark Side, Ghislaine Maxwell, judge to consider a new trial over jurors' comments. Yeah. Alex Murdaugh's lawyer filed a motion to reduce a $7 million bond, saying he has less than $10,000 in his bank account. A Florida father tried to keep his troubled marriage together for his kids. Then he disappeared. Those stories and more today on The Dark Side of...
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of...
That indeed it is. Be sure to press subscribe or follow us wherever you are listening to podcasts. We greatly appreciate your support and helping to keep us on the air. And if you really like it, you want access to advanced episodes, all of them commercial free, the full archive right there, and the bonus material as well, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com, search Dark Side of, or go to darksidepod.com. Tony and Carol with you on today's episode of the program. Lots to dig in here today with some bigger stories.
There's been a lot of news lately.
There has.
Like a lot of crazy stuff.
There's been a lot of like dramatic, I don't want to call these fluff stories because they're not. They're big stories, but they're not, it's not, you know, end of the world or that much of us are ever going to be affected by. But they're dramatic stories. And that's, you know, it's a good distraction from all the other horrible shit going on in our world.
Well, in the Ghislaine Maxwell case, it's like, when you really look at everything, I don't know how she convinces herself, if she really does, that she wasn't involved in that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, here's all these people saying one thing and her saying something else. Mm-hmm. But so I have to say that I felt like for victims everywhere, it was a big win. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it says a lot to anyone who has been victimized and sexually victimized when you see someone get what's coming to them. Mm-hmm. Even if you weren't involved in that case,
sure.
It gives you a little hope that maybe the person who did that to you, mm-hmm. you know, so I could see how a lot of people would be invested in that way in a case like this. Mm-hmm. But damn, it's like, I knew it. I said, I think it was last week when we were talking about this. It's like, okay, but there will be an appeal.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Period. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, that happened a little sooner than what we thought. That got started.
Yeah. That did right away with one of the jurors.
Pisses me off.
Yeah, it's like, really? You couldn't? You why? Why did you not? Ghislaine Maxwell, judge to consider new trial over juror comments. Story comes to us from the Straits Times and Bloomberg. The judge in Ghislaine Maxwell's sex trafficking trial asked prosecutors to and defense lawyers to brief her on whether a new trial is needed over press comments made by a juror. U.S. District Judge Ellison Nathan issued an order Wednesday, January 5th, after Maxwell's lawyers told her earlier they would seek a new trial because the juror failed to disclose a possible bias against her. The juror told reporters that he disclosed to the other members of the jury during deliberations that he was a victim of sexual abuse and further described his memory of those events. Maxwell lawyer Christian Elderin wrote in a letter to the judge. According to the juror, his disclosure influenced the deliberations and convinced other members of the jury to convict Ms. Maxwell. Prosecutors had earlier asked Ms. Nathan to investigate the juror's comments. And Ms. Nathan, in her order, also asked both sides to provide written arguments on whether an inquiry of some kind is permitted and or required, and if so, the nature of such an inquiry. The judge granted the government's request to offer court-appointed lawyers to the juror. As the lawyers battled over one juror's remarks, the New York Times reported Wednesday afternoon that it had interviewed another juror who said they had been a victim of sexual abuse and discussed it during the deliberations that led to Maxwell's conviction. The developments could endanger a verdict that was widely hailed as offering long-delayed justice to victims of Jeffrey Epstein. Maxwell, 60, was convicted of luring and grooming underage girls for sexual abuse by Epstein and participating in some of the abuse itself. She faces up to 40 years in prison for sex trafficking, the most serious of the five counts on which she was found guilty. The first juror to come forward, identified by press outlets only by his first and middle names, Scotty David. Sounds like a radio name.
It does, doesn't it?
I knew a Scotty Davis once, said in interviews with the Independent, Reuters, and the Daily Mail that was the victim of a sexual abuse as a child. He told Reuters he didn't recall being asked about his experiences during jury selection. He also said his story helped sway some jurors who questioned the accuracy of Maxwell's accusers, and told the Daily Mail that he wasn't the only juror who shared stories of being sexually abused. He also claimed that in one interview, he'd sailed through jury selection without ever being asked by the judge or lawyers if he was a victim of sexual abuse. 30-page jury questionnaire. All prospective jurors were required to fill out ahead of time, and the selection process pointedly asked potential jurors if they or anyone close to them had ever been victims of sexual abuse or assault. Those potential jurors who answered in the affirmative were later subjected to further questioning by the judge and lawyers behind closed doors. Scotty David was not subjected to such questioning and didn't mention any sexual abuse history. In an interview by Ms. Nathan, a review of the trial transcript shows, prosecutors on Wednesday asked Ms. Nathan to first hold a non-public hearing, question the juror about her comments, especially his claim he was never asked about any history of sexual abuse. Assuming the accuracy of the reporting, the juror asserted that he flew through the prospective juror questionnaire and does not recall being asked whether he had been the victim of sexual abuse, but stated that he would have answered honestly, prosecutor Maureen Comey said. A number of legal experts have suggested that a juror lying in response to that question could possibly result in a new trial for Maxwell, or at least an inquiry by the court. 2015, four convictions in what was then the biggest criminal tax fraud case ever to go to trial were thrown out after it was learned that an alcoholic suspected lawyer lied to get on the jury. So what's interesting to me about jury selection and what qualifies someone or doesn't qualify someone to be on a jury on a specific case that they have no personal connection to, as this person has no personal connection to Ghislaine Maxwell or Jeffrey Epstein, is that we disqualify people who have experience in the area that's being tried. In what other area of life would we be like, okay, I'm gonna take my car into the shop. You guys are mechanics? Yeah, I know. You guys know too much about the car. I'd like, you get Brandy from down in she's the janitor now. Okay, can she work on the car for me? She knows nothing about, she's never seen a car. Okay, well, as long as she's never seen a car or heard of what a car is, that's really what we want. So they're completely incompetent on the subject whatsoever. That's who we want over here. And we're going to call it a jury of our peers. I think peers implies at least some people have some fucking idea on the topic at hand. And if you're one who experienced it, yes, you could certainly help others understand or attempt to understand some of the reasons why these victims took so long to come out and testify and say anything. The guilt, the shame, all the things that they feel. And it's coming not because you're trying to sway them. You're just giving a account of your own experiences. Experiences used to fucking count for something. Now,
because isn't that kind of what being on a jury, you have to bring?
Yes. I mean, if not, why don't we send a bunch of fucking toddlers who have never lived any portion of life yet, just give them fucking like green and red and just let them sit here and at the end see how many green cards you get and red, and then we'll kind of, you know, we'll base it on that.
I mean, I get like, say you are, I mean, I got kicked off, not kicked off the jury, but I was not selected for the jury.
No.
Simply because I was in media.
Yeah.
Like, that had nothing to do with a case that was way outside the listening area because it was a federal court case.
Sure.
So it was weird. Like, I don't know these people. I don't know where you live. I've never hardly been to your town. I don't know anything about this.
Why?
But yeah. Like, so say I was involved in a bank robbery as a person who was just happened to be in the bank. And these people came in and terrorized everybody.
Yeah.
So then I get called to do jury duty. And it's for a bank robbery. And I think they would say, have you ever been the victim of a crime? And or a maybe have you ever been involved in a bank robbery? Like, because you wouldn't want that person on your jury if you are the defense.
My question is, why the fuck?
That should have been brought up.
Why do lawyers have so much fucking say in who gets to be on the fucking jury?
Well, they pick them.
I know.
Well, the two sides. I mean,
sure.
So they're going to get some they want. They're going to get some.
It's like it's not fucking kickball.
But I could see how if someone had been molested as a child or experienced something like that, why, like that should have been brought out.
Sure.
And I would think it would have been brought out. And if it wasn't brought up in screening the juries, would that really be grounds for an appeal? Yeah. If you never even asked him that question.
I mean, I think the question has to be go somewhere along the lines of, do you consider anyone accused of sexual assault to be guilty? You know, and if your answer is yes, or you feel like you have a prejudice there, and rightfully so, if you're the victim of that, I mean, you may not consciously think, I think everyone who's accused is guilty, but you realize, you know, I may have a bit of a bias here. Sure. Okay. But if you can, I think a lot of people can also not have that where they can go, I went through that, but I don't naturally think every human being who's accused of this is guilty. So I can be, you know, objective in this, but I can also bring, you know, I can bring some understanding to the case as well and perspective when I'm hearing, you know, someone testify and go, okay, I can understand if why they'd feel that way. Or in the opposite end going, this makes no sense. Why are they not showing these sort of things if this is what they're claiming happened to them? You know, it could work both ways.
But I assume that the guy, it was a guy, right? Had like he'd asked and not been truthful during the whole screening process.
Well, it seems like he kind of took the screening process like a lot of us take. You know, you check in at the doctor's office and they give you like 10 sheets and it's like yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And if you don't have a lot of things or you know exactly what your things are, you can just check them real quick. And then the rest of you just kind of draw a big line down the ends
that particular question.
Yeah.
Since you're dealing with underage.
Yeah. Well, this one you kind of got to read.
Had been sexually trafficked. It seems like that would have been a question you would have asked. If I'm sitting in a jury pool and they say, Carol Hughes, I'm like, what? And they're like, so you work in the media.
Yeah.
And your point is, like, it was really weird. I did not get selected for that. That had nothing to do with the case.
Yeah. I don't ever want to be on a jury. It's like, it's not on my to-do list.
I do. I want to go through that whole process. I'm like, yes, I finally got picked. Then I made it through the first cut. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get on this jury. I was all about it. And then I got kicked off for that. Like, if I get kicked off for that, wouldn't asking each juror what your history is, not have to go into it, but, and if you were, can you be objective in this case? Because that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
You need to be objective.
Sure.
Because a lot of those really big cases, you know, where it's hard to find a, you know, like an O.J. Simpson, it's hard to find a jury sometimes.
Well, and then what do you end up with on something like that? I mean, what scares me about an idea like that is like an O.J. Simpson type trial where it was that big of a deal. And I guess, you know, half of our audience doesn't even comprehend how big of a trial that was. But it was a big fucking deal, bigger than any trial I've ever seen since. And there's been some more significant trials, but O.J. was like primetime every network for weeks or months, however long it lasted. What I wonder about that is the quality of the individual that you're getting that is utterly fucking clueless about the subject at hand. It's like, is this really like your best bet of like reasonable, educated human beings?
Yeah.
If they're absolutely clueless as to this being in the news and everywhere you look over the last month?
Recently that George Floyd case was like that.
Yeah.
Where everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
And because it took over, you know, there's just protests all over the country. And so I, like, that is, I would not want to be on a trial, on a jury, no, on a case like that. But, you know, they had to, obviously they'd heard of it, but, you know, they have to really sure. quiz them on, can you be objective?
Yeah.
Because that's all you can yeah. ask for at that point, is to find some people
yeah.
to go in with an open mind.
Because at some point, there's just no way you're going to find anybody who doesn't know about it that's going to be remotely no, competent.
I had listened to some stories on that about trying to find the seat of jury. Mm-hmm. And it's hard.
Yeah.
But so that's why that just makes no sense to me. If I could get it, I mean, that should have been brought up.
You think it'd be a more pointed question that's like actually asked in front of the individual than not yeah. just like on the Scantron.
If they can ask me about me being in media and yeah. then I'm like, yeah, okay, goodbye.
Yeah.
Because I remember leaving the courthouse that day and I kind of felt like the guy who I didn't want to ever go out with, but he's always asking all the girls out. And I'm like, yeah, but what about me? He didn't ask yeah. me out. And not that I wanted to go out with you.
But yeah.
I mean, I kind of wanted to, like, just to see what it'd be like. But I just left that day feeling jilted.
It was funny. I was selected for jury duty once when I was in Wichita. But it was like, I was selected like the week I was moving. So I called down there. I'm like, yeah, I'm leaving. So like, I can't do this.
And see, I'd been called for jury duty several yeah. times, but I'd never been picked.
Yeah. Yeah. I
don't want it to be like a trial that's like full of numbers and shit. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't want one that is going to make me like really yeah. have to dive in and learn something. I just want to like listen to the evidence
mm-hmm.
and go like Jimmy Stewart's going to be the jury foreman. It's going to be just right out of the movies. That's the way I have it in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not reality. Just like I saw something the other day about the town of I forget what it's called, but it's one that's based on Mayberry or May, you know, it's the closest connection. It's Andy Griffith's hometown. And so many people flock there for this idyllic idea of this town that never existed in a setting that never really truly existed, you know, and
there is no Mayberry.
There's no Mayberry. And the peaceful times that it's kind of representing weren't actually all that peaceful. You know, it's like there's a lot of segregation and shit like that going down at that moment in time. And it's just the piece was just kind of focusing on how funny it is where people go. They're like, oh, you know, this is such a great time and place. It's like, and then they flash over to like, and in reality, like, but it's just, you know, it's a nice idea. I think everybody wishes everything like that, you know, were real, but, you know, you got to kind of make your best version of it. Alex Murdaugh's lawyers have filed a motion to reduce a $7 million bond, saying he has less than $10,000 in his bank account. Mr. Murdaugh is a man who cannot pay his phone bill, according to a motion from the beleaguered lawyer's attorneys, who accused the judge of setting an unreasonably high bond. Once wealthy...
That's what happens when you have to give them back the embezzled money.
Well, it's like, what? Why would I even care what you fucking have in your bank account? Look at all the shit you did. Why would I rig this down to you so you could get out? On you only got $10,000. Well, let's make it real low so you can afford it. This isn't fucking Kmart. It's like God.
But I'm like, man, you got $10,000 in the bank. You're doing great.
Yeah. So a lot of it's like, shit, like he's fucking rolling.
Bucks laying around.
Once wealthy attorney Alex Murdaugh has less than $10,000 in his bank account, according to his lawyers, who have asked South Carolina judge to reduce his $7 million bond. Mr. Murdaugh does not have $7 million or anything close to that amount, according to a motion filed Tuesday in the state grand jury system by Murdaugh's attorney, Nick Harpleton, and Jim Griffin. The Island Picket first reported, Mr. Murdaugh is a man who cannot pay his phone bill. If you got about 10 grand in the bank, I think you can kind of pay
his
phone bill.
How much is his phone bill?
Like, what are you doing on that phone? Mr. Murdaugh, 53, has less than $10,000 in his bank accounts, according to the motion obtained by People. The scion of South Carolina legal dynasty has been held in the Columbia jail since October 16th after being arrested and charged with a host of financial and other crimes. He's also facing a slew of civil suits in the millions. Murdaugh made the national news in June when he came home and found his wife, Maggie, 52, and their son, Paul, 22, gunned down on their 1,770-acre estate in Islandtown. Jesus, that's a lot of fucking land. In September, he was arrested and charged in connection with a botched suicide-for-hire plan after allegedly hiring a former client to shoot him in the head so his surviving son, Buster, 26, could claim $10 million in life insurance payouts. He was released on bond and returned to an out-of-state rehab program to treat his opioid addiction. In October, he was arrested and charged in connection with the alleged misappropriation of $4.3 million in settlement funds that were supposed to go to the sons of his late housekeeper, Gloria Statterfield, who died in a trip and fall accident while working at the Murdaugh home. He was jailed on October 16th and remains held in the Columbia Jail in Richland County. On December 13th, after Murdaugh was hit with a new batch of charges, South Carolina Judge Allison Renee Lee granted a $7 million bond on 48 counts of financial misconduct Murdaugh faces, one of the largest in South Carolina history, with no option to pay 10% of it to be released. The court's requiring the full $7 million Suteri bond in tantamount to no bond at all, Murdaugh's attorneys argued in the motion. Murdaugh is facing charges, including filing a false police report, insurance fraud, conspiracy, embezzlement, and money laundering, prosecutors say. Murdaugh's attorneys argued the motion that since these alleged charges are not violent offenses, these ones aren't, Murdaugh therefore has a constitutional right to be released on bail in amount no higher than necessary to ensure his presence at trial. Murdaugh is accused of defrauding his law firm, former clients, and other alleged victims of more than $6.2 million. I think there's a pretty good flight risk here where you can say, no, fuck you. As a result, Murdaugh's assets have been placed into receivership and are under the exclusive control of court-appointed co-receivers. Murdaugh also cannot sell, transfer, or dispose of any of his assets. In the motion, Murdaugh's attorneys pointed out that lawyers for the co-receivers of Murdaugh's accounts say they are unable to allow payment of even small credit card or telephone bills because Murdaugh has very little liquid assets at the time, and given the very limited resources, it doesn't make sense to pay charges for unsecured creditors. Murdaugh's attorneys ended the motion by asking the court to reconsider its bond order, set a hearing to receive evidence from the court-appointed co-receivers, and grant Murdaugh a pretrial release upon the posting of a reasonable bond. A hearing on the motion has not yet been set. A spokesman for the South Carolina Attorney General's office tells People, Murdaugh was hit with another blow this week when the law firm his family started, Peters, Murdaugh, Parker, Estroth, and Dickert, removed the Murdaugh from its name and title.
They just did that?
Like, I think that might have been like one of the...
I would have done that like a long time ago.
Might be the one you want to... Yeah. Is that that guy? Yeah, I'm not going to use you. The firm is now...
Like, can we go buy a bunch of whiteout and somebody get on that letterhead? Yeah. White out his name.
Every page.
Take it off all the envelopes.
That's all we're doing. The firm is now called Parker Group LLP, according to its website. Murdaugh is a person of interest in the murders of his wife and son, according to his attorneys. Authorities haven't named any suspects or made any arrests in connection with the slayings. That's for next week. Attorneys for Murdaugh did not immediately respond to requests for comment. That story is from People.
Okay, so there's a lot of things about that. But like, so he has... What they're saying is he has $10,000 in the bank. Poor broke guy.
That's liquid. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's got, if he doesn't have a massive 401k or something, you know, tons of money in investments, I get that he was embezzling money and doing drugs.
But it's all frozen.
But he's got some money somewhere. I get that it's frozen, but $10,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
In the bank. But they also set that high so he won't make bail. That's the purpose of setting it so
yes
high.
Where is this idea that, well, let's make it affordable? like bail is not fucking Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why they did that, and it's supposed to be in relationship to the crime.
Yes.
He embezzled a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of shit that guy did. And so you don't get out for free. You don't get to go, here, you know what? I have less than $10,000 in the bank, but I'll give you five.
Yeah.
No.
That's not how that works. No. I don't know. it's one of these where you read about it and you go, and this is our justice system. This is why it's so fucked up. Because these sort of things can be argued like this over someone like that. There's all these individuals. Think of this. The hundreds of people involved in this focus on this one, you know, despicable human being. All this energy that's being just drawn out there for this trial and all that's going into it. Versus this piece of shit. Like, couldn't we use this energy for something good?
And couldn't they pretty easily prove the crime?
Well, yes.
And why not just say I'm guilty? Like, what are you fighting for?
Yeah. You already wanted to die, according, I mean, to your story, you know? So,
you only have $10,000 in the bank. Well, you know what? When you're in prison, your $10,000 could go a whole lot farther.
I say,
you don't have to pay room and board. You can buy, like, shampoo and
give him like the fucking
special things.
Give him like the California King bed set in the prison and say, hey, look how big these sheets are. Hey, look up there. That's a pretty high thing. I bet you could hang a sheet from that and then just see what happens. And then maybe this will all go away and everyone can move on with their lives and people don't have to be bogged down with this piece of shit named Alex Murdaugh.
I think like someone like him just go to jail. I'm fine. You know what? Whatever happens.
Yeah.
But that's what jail's for. That's what the court system's for. But it just pisses me off when people like that who are obviously guilty and you know they've got really good evidence.
Yeah.
Just admit it.
Exactly.
Like, why do you drag this shit through the court system?
Oh.
Like, let's just move on. You did it. And sometimes when you admit it, you can get a lighter sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So try a plea deal.
The truth.
Or go away.
The truth will set you free. A Florida father tried to keep his troubled marriage together for his kids. Then he disappeared. Nobody knew that Michael Shaver was missing until police found his body buried in a shallow grave in his own backyard. This sounds like it'll end well. In early 2018, deputies from the Lake County Sheriff's Office showed up outside the Claremont, Florida home of married high school sweethearts, Michael and Lori Shaver. The officers wanted to speak to the devoted dad after his oldest friend called, saying he hadn't seen Michael in person or gotten a call from him in over 2 years. The Shaver was only communicating via text and Facebook messages. Lori Shaver let the deputies inside for a look around. She even answered their questions about Michael. A former commercial pilot who worked as a mechanic, maintaining the iconic monorail system at Orlando's Walt Disney World. Lori alleged that he told police she had no idea where Michael was, and she had last seen him in 2015 when he walked out on her and the kids. But the deputies asked if they could bring in the dogs to search the property. Lori allegedly told him to come back with a warrant, according to an affidavit from the Lake County Sheriff's Office obtained by People. Not even a month later, on March 9th, 2018, deputies returned with a warrant, cadaver dogs, and ground-penetrating radar. By the end of the day, they would recover Michael's body, finding it buried 3 feet beneath a concrete fire pit in their backyard, wrapped in a fitted sheet that was wrapped in a tarp and secured with ratchet straps. I'm still in shock, Wilma Nicholas, the Shaver's next-door neighbor, tells People. There's moments where I just can't believe that the guy is really gone. An autopsy of Michael's skeletal remains revealed that he had been shot once in the back of the head with a .38 caliber handgun several months to several years before being found in a shallow grave in his own backyard. An investigation into his killing ultimately led to Lori's arrest for second-degree murder, an accessory to second-degree murder, on September 17th, 2020. Lori Schaefer, known today as Lori Filmer, after remarrying in 2016, has pled not guilty and has long insisted she had nothing to do with Michael's murder. Well, who was it? The landscaping company?
He ended up dead in your backyard.
And you're just like, he left us.
So people were getting, I'm using air quotes, text messages and Facebook messages from him.
Yeah. Somebody.
Isn't it weird that nobody reported it? Like, hey, you know, I haven't been able to get a hold of him for like 6 months. He texts me and I keep asking him to get together for dinner. And like, have you seen him? Like, it just seems like it would have come to light before 2 years went by.
You know, 10 years ago, sure. But I think we're in a world today where you can communicate via text with someone literally for years without actually speaking.
That's true.
And it's like, I haven't seen you in a long time, but like you communicate all the time via text. And if someone is still feeding that text, you don't really suspect anything. You're just like, oh, they're busy.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just so social and, you know, I've got a group of friends. I just think it would be weird if like I've been, hey, let's get together sometime. Like, what are you doing Saturday? What about Friday? What about next week? What? It's like, shit, he's been blowing me off for 2 years. Like, it's just weird.
I would never cause any harm to the father of my children. Wow. The ex explains. She explains in a March 2020 YouTube video seeking donations for her impending defense. As you know, there's people out there that are trying to paint this picture of me, but it's not me. I'm loving, I'm caring, I'm a servitude heart. I don't judge people, I accept all, and I always try to see the good in everybody. The affidavit alleges that Lori married Travis Filmer on December 31st, 2016, during a backyard ceremony that took place inches from where Michael's corpse was buried. God. On and the slab of concrete Lori and Travis had marked with their initials. She's an evil woman, said Michael Ripley, 46, Michael's friend and former co-worker. For the affidavit, she was always very jealous, and she had attacked him more than once. According to the affidavit, Michael was never reported missing, only because friends and relatives continued receiving messages from his Facebook account, which also updated on occasion. But weeks after his death, authorities alleged Lori and Michael's debit card for online purchases, checks sent to their home, were endorsed and deposited into his account, which Lori allegedly drained over a matter of weeks. Lori also started selling off Michael's guns, giving away his expensive aeronautic tools, per the affidavit. My son's a mechanic, and he'd ask Lori to borrow some kind of tool, and she'd lead him to the shed, Nicholas 57 says. And he says, are you sure Mike doesn't mind that I borrow this? And she goes, oh, no, he's not going to care again. He's never going to be back. Detectives would eventually learn that Michael had no active mobile phone accounts. His driver's license, passport, pilot certification all expired. His vehicle had been repossessed from the driveway in 2016, and his credit card bills all went unpaid. Jeff Wiggs, Lori's attorney, tells People, he considers the state's evidence against his client largely circumstantial, that any money that his client may have removed from any accounts were marital funds. Wiggs says he believes his client is not only innocent of murder, but an abused woman, noting that Michael was arrested for simple domestic battery in 2014. The affidavit alleges Lori struck Michael over the head with a gun, a 38, but that police arrested him, believing that he had pulled out the weapon. The charges were later dropped. I'd be surprised if she got convicted, said Wiggs, adding that he has provided police with information about other potential suspects, only to be told they've been ruled out. Wiggs contends a statement that Lori's new husband allegedly made to police. He's no longer walking the earth, she alleged to have told him, according to the affidavit, during the investigation was coerced. She's got a good heart, Wiggs says, of his client. She really is a good Christian woman. Really kind spirit. Start date for Lori's trial has not been scheduled yet. Yeah.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
So he just up and disappears, takes off, leaving her with the children.
Yeah.
So how did she end up being able to get married? Because don't you normally have to
have death?
If the excuse is he's just out there in the world someplace, yeah. I don't know where he is. Can you get a marriage? Can you get a divorce?
You can get an emergency divorce.
Just with one person?
Yeah. I mean, if you considered abandonment at some point. So, I mean, that could have, it didn't mention that happened though. I mean, she could have just filed again. I mean, only if somebody like actually matches up the records and goes, oh shit, you're like married here and there.
True.
Like nobody fucking cares. But so who knows if she even did that? I mean, she probably just got married again and then they just refiled or did a new file on it.
I mean, there's so many questions. Yeah. But if I'm dating Bob and Bob disappears, mm-hmm. and then Bob just happens to be buried in my backyard where I just happen to put
a new
fire pit over it with my initials and my new boyfriend. Like, how do you explain that? I don't know how that happened. Whoops.
Do you stick with her?
We just randomly picked the fire pit spot. It was a beautiful part of the backyard.
What I'm interested in is because they got that little bit of testimony out of the new husband.
And how do you not notice that your yard's been dug up?
Yeah.
Like, man, we got a mold problem in this backyard, honey.
I wonder, you know, I'm guessing that he probably really didn't know anything about any of this because it all happened before him. But can you imagine that one, that story where it's like, you won't believe this shit. So I started dating this girl and we fell in love and got married. Turns out we ended up having our wedding on the grave of her husband that she allegedly killed.
Weird.
It's just like, that's like anybody's got their story about their craziest things their ex did. That one would like trump everything. It's like, you did what? Like,
that's just so strange. And just to be like, how dare you? She's a good Christian woman. She wouldn't have done that. Okay, well, then who did?
Why is anybody bringing that even up?
And
in
how
this?
Did you not notice that there was like a 6 foot, like, by, well, it'd have to be like 6 foot by, I don't know, 2 to 3 feet wide?
Yeah. Well, maybe the patio was put in. There's, you know, there's stories or situations where it's like, you know, the person left. And if you're the new person in the relationship, you just kind of take them at their word. I mean, you don't go like, can I see proof, you know, that they're this way or that way? It's like, okay. And if there's like already a patio set there, the last thing I think most people are going to think is, well,
absolutely. You know, I think he's innocent, yeah. You know. I think he's a victim in this as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not quite the same.
Yeah.
But just, I mean, none of that makes sense. Like, I'm a good Christian woman. And I mean, it's not a crime that I didn't notice that my backyard had been dug up. And we just happened to put a fire pit there. It's not a crime. That's just such a strange.
I don't think anybody abducting and murdering someone is going to return to your own backyard to bury your body.
Right.
Like that's not, I mean, that's like something only someone who lives there currently may be doing. That's not like you're getting kidnapped and then let's go back to your yard. I mean, like, what?
It's like, what should we do with this guy? We got to bury him. Let's bury him in her backyard.
Where people currently live.
They'll never notice.
Yeah, they'll never notice all of us, this construction work going on back here, ask any questions while her husband's completely missing and she's trying to figure that shit show out. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Makes no sense.
I don't think that's going to end well. Goes.
We need to follow this one.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to end well for her. Just kind of,
I hope it doesn't.
Kind of my gut on that one. But there you go. That's going to wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side of. Thank you guys for listening and keeping us on the air. If you want to support the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts and check us out on Patreon, patreon.com, search Dark Side of. Or go to darksidepod.com. $5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus episodes, the advanced episodes, all the bonus material. We greatly appreciate that. So, like I said, what helps keeps the show afloat. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of.